The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop.
Tampa, 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 Tampa.
Well, I had to get that chant out one last time. I actually didn't get to do it this much this year because the Bucks pretty much sucked. But Tom Brady has officially announced his retirement. Yes, this is the second time he's done it. He did it actually exactly a year to the day that he did it last year. But he says it's for real this time. I believe him. I kind of feel like last year he was teetering on edge. He didn't really know exactly, and I have a feeling maybe somebody close to him, Giselle, maybe somebody out there kind of threw it out there that he's going to retire, and then he was just kind of forced to retire, didn't really want to retire, and then so he just ended up coming back. And this year, this last season wasn't spectacular, but it wasn't bad. I mean, the good thing for him is that he's walking out with his health for the most part. But he is officially retired, and what an amazing career it was. I mean, I saw it from start to finish, and I just have to say thank you for the memories, Tom Brady. Like, it's just crazy that I got to see somebody who was a sixth-round pick, who really wasn't thought of as shit. I always love when the draft combine comes around because he was the worst performance ever of all time, still to this day at the draft combine, and he is now the greatest of all time. So it just goes to show that the draft combine isn't all that it's cracked up to be. But he was just the epitome of hard work. He was never the most talented football player on the field. He was never the most athletic football player on the field, but he was going to outwork you. He played like he was always going to lose his job. I mean, what I have always loved most about watching Tom Brady is that the perfect example was, because, you know, his last final game was that loss to my Dallas Cowboys. So thank you. I'm so glad we have that memory stamped in our notebook there, because we needed that. We never beat Tom Brady, but we finally got to not only beat Tom Brady, but kick his ass in a playoff game. So that was great. But what I loved in that playoff game about Tom Brady specifically is that there was like a minute 45 left on the clock, and the Buccaneers are obviously not, they have no chance of winning this game. But Tom Brady's on the field playing it like they're going to win this game. And it just always, I always love to see somebody like that who plays that hard, because there's a lot of divas in this game. And there's just a lot of selfish people just in the world in general. But it's really cool to see somebody who goes out there who just believes in hard work, who just works really fucking hard his entire career. You can't take shit away from him. And I mean, it was just, for me, I'm just privileged to have watched the whole career from start to finish, and just go from completely hating the dude. As a fan, I'm never one of those people who's like wishing ill will on any players or anything. I've always thought that was kind of stupid. But, you know, we always, as fans, we like and hate players. And at first I did not like him, but then after Super Bowl 51, I couldn't turn away from what was happening, because I am such a football historian. I love just the sport of football in general. And when he came back at Super Bowl 51, I was like, I just can't hate this. How can I hate this? I mean, because to me, it's so much easier to just sit back, enjoy the game, and just watch this career flourish. And then you get to sit here and say, when everybody talks about him being the GOAT, and if some kid years from now ask you, was Tom Brady really that good? Well, you could sit here and be like, oh yeah, not only was he that good, I got to watch the whole fucking career. And then you just kind of let them know that this is why he was so great, so on and so forth. But the dude was just a unicorn, and he's walking away as one of the greatest in the game. One of the best attributes for him is his health as well. Like I said, he's going to be walking away healthy. He didn't even lose a step this year with the Buccaneers. I mean, really, just overall, the Buccaneers were a bad team. lots of injuries, but just lots of other issues. You could tell they just weren't really playing as a good team overall. But, I mean, on the field, Brady had a great year. He led multiple comeback drives. He made the playoffs all 3 years he was with the Buccaneers. So it was a very successful move to Tampa for him. So, I mean, the way he's ending it, I feel like is a good end. He has nothing left to prove. I thought it was kind of funny. Everybody was talking about, oh, he's going to go to this team. Oh, he's going to go to that team. And I just kind of was like, nah. The difference between now and when he left New England was he still had something to prove when he left New England. He had to prove that he could do it without Bill Belichick. We all know that Belichick had a lot to do with the career of Tom Brady and who he is today and all the records he owns and the how deep the resume is and just part of being the GOAT. There's a lot of people along the way, and we all know Belichick started. It started there. But him moving on to the Buccaneers, he needed to prove that I could do it without Belichick, and he did. He won a Super Bowl, went to the playoffs all three seasons. So he's proven. He doesn't even need Belichick to win the big one. He can still be great. I mean, his accuracy was still great. His arm strength was still phenomenal, quickest draw in the league still. So he's at least not going out like, even though Peyton Manning went out with winning a Super Bowl, if you remember Peyton Manning's last season with the Denver Broncos, it was really tough to watch because you could tell he was just breaking down physically and he could just barely get through some of the games. It's nice that he went out with the Super Bowl, but his overall last season was just a straight-up struggle, and it was not what you wanted to see from Peyton Manning. We didn't get that from Tom Brady. He still had a good year statistically, and like I said, it was mostly just the team around him that was the downfall. Not to say that he didn't have any – he did make some bad passes and everything, but overall, it's not like he's going out just barely making it. No, he's still healthy. You know, in his entire career, he's only missed 19 games total. One season was due to the ACL injury that he suffered in game one of that season. And he tore his ACL, missed the entire year, and then missing the 4 games for stupid-ass, phony bullshit Deflategate. So he's been very durable his entire career. He's taken care of himself, and he's just been very grateful as well. It's always nice to hear somebody who's grateful for everything they have. And I just got to say, thank you, Tom Brady, for all the great memories. And also thank you for the most important memory of the Cowboys kicking your ass in your last game. So with that being said, now that Tom Brady is out of the game, let's just read off just part of his resume here. I have a full page of what is broken down into Tom Brady regular season records, Tom Brady postseason records, and Tom Brady Super Bowl records, because that's how much of a GOAT this dude is. And I'm sure there are tons of things I'm missing that are not even records that he owns that are on this piece of paper. But, you know, the dude's been around for so long and achieved so fucking much. It's like, Jesus Christ, we could forget a few things from him. So let's start with all the regular season records that Tom Brady owns, beginning with 333 games started, 251 wins by a starting quarterback, 89,214 passing yards, 649 passing touchdowns, 7,753 completions, 98 touchdowns thrown to different receivers, 19 division titles, 15 Pro Bowl appearances. He is the oldest player to win the NFL MVP. He did that at 40 years old. He's also the oldest player to be named at the first team All-Pro. He did that at 40 years old. He was with the Patriots for 20 seasons, so that's with one team, a regular season record with the Patriots. And then he is the only player ever to beat all 32 NFL teams. So those are just the regular season records he owns. Now let's discuss the postseason records that Tom Brady owns. 48 games started, 35 wins by a starting quarterback, 10 consecutive playoff wins from 2001 to 2005, 13,400 passing yards, 505 passing yards in a game, 88 passing touchdowns, 39 interceptions, 1,200 completions, 28 multi-touchdown passing games, 14 game-winning drives, 14 conference championship appearances, and 10 conference championship wins. Now on to the Super Bowl records that Tom Brady owns, starting with the most important, 10 Super Bowl appearances, and then 7 Super Bowl wins. That's more than any NFL franchise. Yeah, that's right. Tom Brady has more Super Bowls than any NFL franchise in the league. More than the Patriots, y'all. More than any fucking team in the league. He's got 7. He's got 5 Super Bowl MVPs, 21 touchdown passes, 3,039 passing yards, 277 completions, 421 pass attempts, 505 passing yards in a game, 43 completions in a game, 62 pass attempts in a game, and 6 game-winning drives. The dude is the GOAT for a reason. And like I said, I am privileged to have watched the entire thing. And, you know, that right there says it all. Obviously, he's a shoe-in for the Hall of Fame. And, you know, congratulations, Tom Brady. I wonder if he's actually going to, like, eat regular food now. My guess is no. He's probably going to stick with his stupid little diet. He might eat a pizza here and there. But I imagine not much is going to change for him. But it would be nice. Maybe he's going to show us all on social media the first time he eats, like, real ice cream or drinks coffee or eats a whole strawberry. Who knows, but one thing's for sure, that was a fucking fantastic career that he had, and I wish him luck in whatever else he does. I know we're going to see plenty of him. He did just sign a deal with Fox, so see you later, Greg Olson. You will be replaced by Tom Brady. Nice little placeholder there for you. But he has not announced when he's going to begin that. I mean, you can't blame the dude if he ends up taking the year off at least, but, you know, who knows. So in other NFL news, we had a couple of more coaches sign. First, we had Sean Payton. He has officially signed with the Denver Broncos. Denver Broncos ended up having to give a couple of draft picks away to New Orleans, so he was traded to the Broncos. I think this is a fucking fantastic move, just because Russell Wilson, very similar to Drew Brees, just in the fact that they're both smaller quarterbacks. And I just feel like Sean Payton's going to get the best out of Russell Wilson. I know a lot of people think Wilson's washed because of this last year. I just think it was because it's a new system, a shitty coach. And I feel like Sean Payton's just going to get the best out of this team, especially because they're already good on defense. They really just have to put in they need some offensive line help. And, you know, I look at Jerry Jeudy, their wide receiver. I think that guy's solid. So, I mean, they really only need, like, one other receiver to really be an offensive threat. But Sean Payton has signed with the Denver Broncos. And then D'Amico Ryans ended up signing with the Houston Texans. Hopefully Houston is not going to screw over the black man yet again, as they've done the last 2 years in a row, where they have hired a black man and then he's gets fired the following season after being the worst team in the league. Hopefully that does not happen to D'Amico Ryans, because Ryans is going to have a lot of building to do with Houston. Now, the good thing is I do think he's going to get more than just the 1 year like the last two guys. I do kind of feel like this is actually a long-term thing that Houston's finally looking at for once. Just because, for one, D'Amico Ryans, if you don't remember, he played linebacker with the Houston Texans years ago when he was a football player, and he was a badass motherfucker. And so it's no shock that he did so well as a defensive coordinator. Now we'll see how he does as a coach with the Houston Texans. But like I said, he's got his job cut out for him. But I feel like this is going to be more than the hire the black man for 1 year and then kick his ass out the next year without even giving him a snowball's chance in hell at even turning the team around. So hopefully D'Amico Ryans could do a little something with Houston, but I wouldn't expect that turnaround to happen right quick. But he does have a high draft pick. We'll see what happens, but congratulations to D'Amico Ryans. He definitely deserves the shot, and hopefully he's given a real shot, unlike the last two coaches in Houston. And then we don't really have any other NFL news, but since we are approaching the Super Bowl, yes, we are 1 week away from the Super Bowl. Unfortunately, this is a very depressing weekend for myself, and I'm sure many other sports fans or just football fans in general, because this is the first weekend with no real football. We get the shitty Pro Bowl, but I've never cared about the Pro Bowl, and I certainly don't care about it now that it's just a bunch of fucking gimmicky bullshit and flag football. Fuck that shit. I have no interest in watching that. So there is no real legitimate football on this weekend, and that's just a very depressing state of affairs. Even next week, even though we get the Super Bowl, which I love the Super Bowl, I've already stated on this show many times, the Super Bowl is like the only holiday I care about. To me, it is a holiday. It's the day I look forward to the most. It doesn't matter who's playing. I just love the Super Bowl, except for the beginning of the day, because it takes for fucking ever through pregame, through pregame, through pregame, through pregame, through fucking pregame, and the goddamn national anthem, and then this, that, and the other, and then we finally get to the fucking game. Thankfully, we get the great-ass fucking Rihanna as halftime, so I'm totally looking forward to that, because I love me some Rihanna, and she's got some badass hits, so I'm interested to see what she's going to do, and also who she's going to bring out to perform with her. My prediction maybe would be Eminem, because they've done a couple of songs together, and he did just perform at the halftime show last year, so maybe they'll sneak him in there. I would love, me personally, we all know I'm a huge Britney Spears fan. I would love to see her there, but I think she's a little too out of it to really actually perform at this current point in time. So I wouldn't expect to see that, but hey, maybe I'll get lucky and she'll be lucid enough that day, but I don't think that's going to happen. Maybe stupid ass Drake. I'm not a Drake fan. Couldn't care less if he shows up, but all I know is Rihanna's going to be there. Love her music. Sure, she's going to have plenty of, I mean, she does have plenty of hits to choose from. So I'm interested to see what she's going to mix it up with. You know, she's taken a few years off. And because, you know, she's just, you know, chilling, being a billionaire, you know, being a boss bitch. But it's going to be fun to see her there. You know, the Super Bowl overall, like leading up to it, takes for fucking ever. So it's kind of sucks getting to this time of year as a football fan. But, you know, it is what it is. So with that being said, why don't we review my preseason predictions and see how, I'd say how close I was to how the end of the season went, but yeah, I did pretty bad with my predictions, but that's okay. That's why I put it out there, because I couldn't care less about being wrong. What the fuck does this does not affect my life in any way, shape, or form. If I happen to pick a Super Bowl and neither team makes it, it doesn't really affect my life in any way. So I'm totally fine with being wrong on these things. I actually think it's funny to review kind of what I felt at the beginning of the season and see where we ended up. So let's do that with what my preseason predictions were on the football season. I'm only going to go through who I thought the top seven seeds were going to be, and then I'm going to do the championship games and then the Super Bowl. So this is how I thought the NFC was going to go. I thought the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were going to win the NFC South and be the number one overall seed. Well, they did win the NFC South, but they were nowhere near the number one overall seed, and they barely won the NFC South. As a matter of fact, they were a very pathetic team this year. Then at number two, I had the Los Angeles Rams winning the NFC West. And as a matter of fact, this was one of the worst teams in the league this year. So yeah, Rams did not make it. Then at number three, I had the Green Bay Packers winning the NFC North. Yeah, another team that not only did not win their division, but did not make the playoffs. Then I had at number four, my Dallas Cowboys winning the NFC East. Now, they did make the playoffs and actually had a shot at winning the NFC East, but the Eagles were just that much better than them. So they were the wild card spot instead, but the Eagles did get the division. So I was wrong there on the division, but right that the Cowboys made the playoffs. Actually, I feel like the Cowboys were a better team than I felt like they were going to be, even though I did predict them to lose in the divisional round at the beginning of the season too, which is where they lost. So, I mean, I was actually right on the Cowboys this year. Then at number five, I had the Arizona Cardinals. Those losers were nowhere near the playoffs, but I did predict that they were not going to be that good this year. I just had them as a wild card team. Then my number six seed, I had the Minnesota Vikings, the team that dominated the NFC North. So they were a lot higher than I predicted. And then last but not least, I had the Philadelphia Eagles rounding out the last wild card spot at number 7. How wrong I was on that one. Not only are they the number 1 overall seed, but they are essentially the best team in the league from top to bottom, and I was completely wrong about that. So that was probably a little bit of my haterism injected into that, because I do remember I really didn't want to put the Eagles in there, but they just magically made it in my wild card spot, so they did a lot better than I anticipated. Then turning to the AFC, I had my number 1 overall seed as the Buffalo Bills winning the AFC East. They weren't the number 1 overall seed. They were the number 2, but they basically did what I expected them to do. Then my number 2 seed was the Baltimore Ravens. I had them winning the AFC North. They barely made the playoffs and did not win their division. Then the number 3 seed, I had the Los Angeles Chargers winning their division, the AFC West. No, they did make the playoffs, but they did not win their division. Then at number 4, I had the Indianapolis Colts winning their division, the AFC South. Yeah, they were one of the worst teams in the league. Then at number 5, I had the Denver Broncos. Another one of the worst teams in the league. Then at number 6, I had the Miami Dolphins. That's about right. Had them exactly right there, as a matter of fact, right where they ended up at. And then rounding out the AFC, I had the Las Vegas Raiders. So, yeah, another team that did not make it. So I was completely off there. My NFC championship game was going to be the Dallas Cowboys at the Green Bay Packers. Oh, so just lied there. I said I had the Cowboys losing in the division round. No, I had them losing in the championship round to the Packers. Neither one of them made it to the NFC championship game. And then my AFC championship game was the Baltimore Ravens versus the Buffalo Bills. Neither one of them made it. And then so my Super Bowl, I had the Green Bay Packers versus the Buffalo Bills, with the Buffalo Bills ultimately as my Super Bowl champion. And that did not happen either, because we have either the Chiefs or the Eagles will be the Super Bowl champion. And you'll notice I didn't even have the Chiefs making the playoffs. What a dumbass. So that's how stupidly I predicted the season to go, but that's what happens. If you actually, took into account what everybody said at preseason, most of our predictions would look like this. It's just I'm more than happy to put it out there, just because it is actually funny to look back on it and say, oh, wow, I was really off on that one. Or also, like I said, I was basically right on the Cowboys. I didn't expect them to win the Super Bowl this year, so I didn't get my hopes up in that regard. And then I was perfect on the Dolphins right there. So, yeah. And not too far off on the Bills. They kind of petered out there in the divisional round. But, you know, they had a shot at Super Bowl. So, but the Packers did not. They didn't even make the playoffs. So, those were my preseason predictions for the NFL. Now, we did have a big week in the NBA. Lots of great performances this week, beginning on Monday night, with the one, the only, Luka the Don. This motherfucker is just having a fucking phenomenal season. He had 24 points in the first quarter against the Detroit Pistons in a Dallas Mavericks win. They won 111-105. Luka ended up with the stat line of 53 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, and 4 blocks. The guy is just having such a phenomenal year. He did get injured last night. Not sure how serious it is. It didn't look that serious, but then again, who the fuck knows? But other than that, man, Luka is just, he's been on fire from start to finish this season. Then Tuesday night, Lakers actually played a good game against the New York Knicks. They got the overtime win, 129-123. But that's not the biggest news from that night. As a matter of fact, the biggest news is LeBron James. He also adds to his stellar resume, just like Tom Brady. LeBron is now fourth all-time assists leader. He passed both Mark Jackson and Steve Nash against the Knicks. He actually had a pretty solid game, too. He went for a triple-double, 28 points, 10 rebounds, and 11 assists. Although, I wouldn't say he was a huge impact in the game. Obviously, he impacted the game, but he didn't have the type of night that everybody was hoping he was going to have, because now he's really closing in on Kareem's all-time leading scoring record, and he's about to break that. He's only like 63 points away, so he should be breaking that next week at some point, I imagine, unless something crazy happens. You know, he could get injured or something like that, but other than that, he's closing in on that. But he's now fourth all-time assist leader, and that says a lot. Because I know a lot of people like to talk about his scoring or his defense, but he's a great passer. He's one of the best at reading the court and getting his teammates involved. Not so much this season because the Lakers fucking suck, but they did have a good game against the Knicks, even though they almost gave this one away too. But it was a big night for him, and he is now fourth all-time in assists. And it was a big deal for him to pass Mark Jackson too, because they were in New York. Mark Jackson used to play for the Knicks, and so that's a big deal. He passed ex-Knick in New York. So big night for LeBron. Then the same night, on Tuesday night, Nikola Jokic had his 16th triple-double of the season against the New Orleans Pelicans in a big win, 122-113. Jokic had 26 points, 18 rebounds, and 15 assists. The guy is unstoppable. And don't forget that I said that name there because he comes up yet again when I'm talking about NBA here. But let's get to Wednesday night. Damian Lillard went off in a big Portland Trailblazers win against the Memphis Grizzlies, 122-112. It was a battle between Ja and Damian Lillard. This is some amazing point guard play between the two of them. Ja ended up with 32 points and 12 assists, a double-double right there. And then Damian Lillard dropped 42 points and 10 assists, so he also had a double-double. As I was saying about Lillard last week, I believe, the guy he's one of the most underrated point guards in the game. And this just goes to show because he went toe-to-toe against another spectacular point guard, an up-and-coming point guard, too. The guy who's really taking the league by storm right now is Ja. And Damian Lillard's like, nah, y'all, I'm still here. And not only am I still here, I'm going to get this win against a really damn good Memphis Grizzlies team. And then Thursday night, Giannis Antetokounmpo went off. At one point, the Milwaukee Bucks were down to the LA Clippers by 21 points, and Giannis scored 20 of his 54 points in the fourth quarter in a huge Milwaukee Bucks win, 106-105. Giannis ended up with 54 points and 19 rebounds, so a big monster double-double for Giannis. And then, as I said, don't forget the name Nikola Jokic. He had his 17th triple-double last night against the Golden State Warriors in a demolishing win against the Golden State Warriors. Denver won 134-117. Jokic stat line, 22 points, 16 assists, and 14 rebounds. Basically the same as Tuesday night. The guy is a force. I mean, he's like scoring triple-doubles. Like, that's his 17th of the season. Like, this guy is crazy. He is such a skilled player. And and Denver, the number one seed in the Western Conference right now. So they right now are probably the team to beat out West. But big week for Jokic and all these guys, really. It's been a really solid week for basketball, thankfully, because that's what we're all going to be turning to soon here with the close of football season. And with that being said, let's move on to UFC, because a bunch of new big fights have been announced. So let's get it started with UFC 285. Gonna be on March 4th. It is the return of John Bones Jones versus Cyril Gane. I might be pronouncing his name incorrectly. I almost always pronounce his name incorrectly. But Gane's been he's been an up-and-comer. He just got that huge win in France in the summer, and he's really been climbing the ranks. But John Bones Jones is a legend. And when you use that word, that's not even a joke. He is a legend in UFC. He's still one of the best out there. And even though he's taken a couple years off, 2020 was the last time he fought. So we're going to see if he's out of shape at all. But I mean, I don't know. This is a big matchup for him too, because this isn't, like I said, this is no slouch. And this is actually for the vacant title here. Jones used to have it, but then he gave it up because Jones, he's had some legal issues over the years, but then he's also had, he failed a drug test. And then he also had some contract disputes, with the UFC. So not only has he not fought since 2020, but even before that, he hadn't fought a couple years in between that too. So he's kind of had his trials and tribulations, But still, no matter what happens in this fight, he's a legend. But I think a lot of us UFC fans are rooting for him. And this is going to be a big fight against Gain. And that's the first up of some spectacular matchups we have. Then we have UFC 286, which is 2 weeks from that March 4th matchup between Jones and Gain. On March 18th, we get part two of Leon Edwards versus Kamaru Usman. And that, if y'all don't remember, that was a big knockout from Leon Edwards. He was such, you know, he was such an underdog coming into that fight. And he comes right out and knocks Usman out. And, you know, Usman, he's no bitch about it. He knows he got beat. And I kind of have a feeling dude's going to come to fight in this one. And that's definitely going to be a fun fight to watch. And then UFC 287, April 8th. We have part two of another great matchup between Alex Pereira and Israel Adesanya. Another big knockout, another big upset between, Pereira knocking out Adesanya in their last matchup. So I'm expecting Adesanya to come big in this one as well. But that was a fun matchup. But also in UFC 287, we're going to have Gilbert Burns versus Jorge Masvidal. I'm a big Masvidal fan, even though he's coming off of three losses right now. He lost to Covington and Usman twice. But Masvidal is just, to me, a very fun fighter to watch because he just gets some of these crazy knockouts. And he's a scrappy fighter, and I just always enjoy his fights. And he's very streaky as well because he's on three losses. He's lost three in a row right now. But I mean, before that, it's like he won three, lost three, won three. That's kind of his thing. Now that he's lost three, wouldn't be shocked if he beats Burns and then goes on a little bit of a winning streak there. But we've got four big fights right there. That Masvidal one is actually a co-main event. So these are all big fights, and I'm looking forward to each and every one of them. Especially those two part. I mean, honestly, I'm looking forward to all four of them because I'm interested to see what's going on with John Bones Jones. As I said, the dude's a legend. He's one of the greatest UFC fighters of all time. It's going to be cool to see if he still has it in the octagon. All right. And then today's show, we are going to end it with another Top 5 list. Since the Super Bowl is around the corner, today's Top 5 list is going to be the Top 5 Super Bowl MVPs of all time. And basically my criteria on this, because it obviously we have, you know, we're at Super Bowl 57, so we have 56 MVPs. But my criteria was like who their opponent was, what type of stats they put up, what type of effect they had directly on the game. I even looked at some other people's rankings, and there's one in my top five who was going to be in my top five without me even really thinking about it because he made such an impact in the game. And he wasn't in anybody's top five. He was actually like really middle of the road. And I think it's weird because he made one of the biggest impacts in Super Bowl history, at least in my opinion. But let's get started with number five. You're going to see a little bit of bias on this one. But also at the same time, he did have a stellar performance. And that would be Super Bowl 27, my favorite player of all time, quarterback Troy Aikman. This was the Dallas Cowboys versus the Buffalo Bills, January 31st, 1993, played in the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, California. And this was just a huge ass kicking by the Cowboys. This was the first of their, three Super Bowl wins in that dynastic era that they had. But, this was probably the best year they had, but Troy Aikman, man, he had not only a phenomenal year, but this game, he owned it. He went 22 for 30, 273 yards, four touchdown passes, even had 28 rushing yards, and which is just very rare for him because he was not known for running much at all. And then he had a 140.7 passer rating. So you'll see how accurate he was during this one. I mean, he pretty much scored a touchdown in every single quarter in this one, and the Cowboys did get the win 52-17, and it was an ass-kicking. What I loved most about this Dallas Cowboys team is they never, ever let up. Even if they had a lead, they were like, nah, we're going to keep building that lead. That's why they kicked so much ass, especially in 1992. But yeah, Troy Aikman, Super Bowl 27 MVP, he is number five for me. Then at number four on my top five Super Bowl MVP performances of all time, Super Bowl 18, Marcus Allen. of the Los Angeles Raiders. This is Los Angeles Raiders against the Washington Redskins. This was took place on January 22nd, 1984, Tampa Stadium in Tampa, Florida. And man, Marcus Allen. Now, I know a lot of you young cats don't, you're not aware of Marcus Allen, but Marcus Allen was one of the most electric running backs of all fucking time. He was so fast. He made so many crazy moves. Like in this Super Bowl in particular, he gets the handoff and he goes to one side and then he loops. He's like, oh shit, here's a wall of Redskins. And he loops around and goes the opposite direction, avoids getting tackled and scores a fucking 74-yard touchdown. That's how insanely electric Marcus Allen was. I mean, oh my God. Marcus Allen was so much fun to watch. If you have not watched any highlights of Allen, you need to watch him. But this game in particular, he was insane, and he was the reason why this Raiders team kicked the crap out of the Redskins 38-9. I mean, he had 20 carries, 191 rushing yards, 2 rushing touchdowns, 2 catches for 18 yards. The guy was just on some in this game. But as I said, Marcus Allen, by far, one of the most exciting running backs this league has ever seen. And I don't think he gets talked about a lot because, you know, a lot of us 90s kids, we had like Barry Sanders and Emmitt Smith. But Marcus Allen is like, Marcus Allen was like a shit, man. He was, because he had like O.J. Simpson's, like, he was similar to O.J. in his bruiser mentality, but he was so fast and finesse, kind of like a Tony Dorsett. Yeah, if I had to talk about, kind of like, compare Marcus Allen's game to anybody, I would say he's a cross between O.J. Simpson and Tony Dorsett, where he's a bruiser in the middle, but he's fast as fuck like Tony Dorsett. So that's number 4 on my top 5 Super Bowl MVPs. Then at number 3 on my top 5 Super Bowl MVPs, this is who I was talking about, who was in the middle of the road for everybody, but this Super Bowl sticks out to me, and it's because of this one player. Super Bowl 50, and that is Von Miller. Denver Broncos versus the Carolina Panthers. Now, this Carolina Panthers team was so fucking good on offense. Cam Newton won MVP this year. They only lost one fucking game. Like, the Panthers were rolling over everyone. They should have easily fucking won this game. So this took place on February 7th, 2016, Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, California. Von Miller, in my opinion, single-handedly won this game. From the jump, this guy, he had sacks, he had 6 tackles, 2.5 sacks, and 2 forced fumbles. One of the forced fumbles, actually, were both of them? No, I know one of them was for a touchdown. The other one led to a touchdown. But, like, he made so many impactful plays in this game. He was all over the field, and this game, it sticks out in my head like no other for, like, single-handed performances. Now, I know most lists probably put him in the middle of the road because he's defense. For me, I immediately thought of this game. I was like, Von Miller had one of the most impactful games because, like, Cam Newton, as I said, this offense was so electric, and Cam Newton had an MVP year, and he only went 18 for 41. 18 for 41 and 265 yards and no touchdowns with 3 turnovers. This was easily Cam Newton's worst fucking game, not only of that season, but probably of his career. It was a bad game. But the reason why is because Von fucking Miller owned it from the jump. I mean, he was all over this offense. He was killing it. This offensive line had no answer for him. And he, because Newton, the thing about Cam Newton, if you don't remember, was he not only could throw that ball deep and was pretty damn accurate, but he could run like a motherfucker, and he was big as all hell and difficult to take down. Well, not for Von Miller on this day. And the Broncos did end up getting the win 24-10, and it was not even close. It was a dominating Denver Broncos performance. But Von Miller, to me, that performance just stands out. Just such a huge impact by one fucking player. And the reason why I put it up there, too, like I said, this Panthers team on offense was unfucking stoppable. And Von Miller was like, I give zero fucks, y'all. I'll give me my Super Bowl and give me that MVP, bitch. Then at number two on my top five Super Bowl MVPs, I have Super Bowl 24, Joe Montana. This took place January 28th, 1990 in the Superdome of New Orleans. San Francisco 49ers versus the Denver Broncos. This was an absolute trouncing by the 49ers, 55-10. But I feel like this is probably one of the most perfect, flawless games any quarterback could have had. Now, a lot of people aren't that familiar with Joe Montana, and he's always been known as one of the greatest of all time until Tom Brady eclipsed him. But Joe Montana showed up when he needed to show up. If it's a championship game, step the fuck back if you're playing against Joe Montana. This guy always had a great game. That it was actually difficult for me to pick which of his three MVPs, Super Bowl MVPs he won, which performance was the better of them. And I picked this one just because of the dominating performance, but also this Denver Broncos defense, they were the best. They allowed the fewest points in the league, so they were the best against offenses. And Joe Montana lit them the fuck up. I mean, the Niners won 55-10. So that just goes to show you, right? I mean, it was such a blowout that Coach George Seifert put Steve Young, who was a backup at the time, in the fourth quarter with a 45-point lead. So that's how much the Niners dominated this game. But Joe Montana was that dude. He went 22 for 29, 297 yards, 5 touchdowns, which at the time was a record. But Steve Young actually broke that six years later after this game. He would end up throwing for 6 over the Chargers. And I did not put that in my top five. As a matter of fact, I found it amusing because a lot of people put that Steve Young performance at number one. And don't get me wrong, that was a hell of a performance from Steve Young. But that Chargers team was pretty awful. Yes, they made the Super Bowl, but they were not that good of a team. And they just got their asses handed to them. Like I said, great performance from Steve Young, but I had it nowhere. I didn't even really consider it. I had it at number six. It was like number six or number seven for me just because I feel like just the Chargers weren't really a good opponent. Whereas all these other teams, they actually played good opponents. Even this one, like I said, ass kicking by the Niners, but the Broncos were a team that played offenses very well. They did not play Joe Montana very well. Not many people did when it came to a championship game. That's even true in his college days. But Joe Montana was cold-blooded and made all of the big plays. This was one of the greatest performances by a quarterback ever in a championship game. Then at number one. Now, when I said I thought of Von Miller right off the bat, I did think of him right off the bat after I thought of this Super Bowl performance. Because to me, Super Bowl 32 and Super Bowl MVP Terrell Davis is the greatest Super Bowl MVP performance of all fucking time. And here's why. So first of all, this is Denver Broncos versus the Green Bay Packers. So this Packers team, they're the defending Super Bowl champions. Remember that. And they're coming off of a big couple of years. They're one of the most dominating teams in the 90s. And the Broncos, they've been building. You know, they've had John Elway all these years. He's starting to see the twilight of his career, but he's still, you know, putting it in, playing great on the field. But he just has never got that Super Bowl. So finally, the Broncos draft Terrell Davis. He works his way up from being like a nobody on special teams, nonetheless, to becoming the Super Bowl MVP in this big Denver Broncos win over the Packers 31-24. This took place on January 25th, 1998, Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego. I love this Super Bowl, by the way. This is one of my favorite Super Bowls of all time. Terrell Davis, one of my favorite players of all time, as well as John Elway. So I really actually liked this team, and I was totally rooting for them because I fucking hated the Packers. Still hate the Packers, but really hated the Packers at this point in my life. But one of the reasons why this is such an amazing performance to me, it's not just his stat line. Because, you know, his stat line, 30 carries, 157 yards, 3 rushing touchdowns, 2 catches for 8 receiving yards. So, yeah, that stat line is just fucking fantastic right there. But the thing about this Super Bowl, and we all knew it, Terrell Davis had to be the workhorse in this game for the Broncos to get the win. Because he did. He had an MVP-type season. He took the league by storm. He had a phenomenal fucking year. Well, he starts the game off with a migraine headache. And he doesn't have one of these, like, little, oh, my God, I got a headache. If you've never had a migraine, which I've had them, I get them from time to time, and bad ones, too. And by bad ones, I mean ones that make you throw up, ones where it's really difficult to actually see. Sometimes, for me personally, I'll see kind of like double vision, where it's like a broken glass. And so that's kind of what I see through my eye. It's kind of like a broken glass. And it's just really difficult. So this guy, that's kind of what happened to Terrell Davis. He's always been known to have migraines too. This isn't some new phenomenon for him, but it happened on Super Bowl Sunday. And so he's actually taken out of the game at one point because he's just so fucked up. As a matter of fact, I personally feel like if it was today's day and age, he would not be back on the field because it's a head injury. And I mean, they just treat that shit differently. So I kind of feel like if it was in today's day and age, we wouldn't have even gotten this epic performance from Terrell Davis. But essentially, they take him out of the game for a little bit. And he takes some medicine. They wait for it to kick in, and it doesn't really kick in. He basically has a migraine the entire game, and is seeing double vision for a while too. And but he put up that performance, and that's why I put that number one, because not only did he play through that migraine, not only did he put those great stats on the field, but his team fucking won against a damn good team. I mean, these were the top two teams that year, by the way. Broncos, Packers ran through the AFC and NFC, 100% deserved to be there. And that was the first of 2 Super Bowl wins for John Elway. And like I said, that is just one of my favorite Super Bowls of all time. And so before Von Miller, I mean, I thought of him right off the bat, but Terrell Davis, I was like, oh, that's my number one. Number one with a bullet, because that performance was so insane to watch. Because at one point you're like, is Terrell Davis even coming back in this game? Not only did he come back in, he dominated. This was just a spectacular showing from that Denver Broncos team, and just a great performance from the eventual Super Bowl MVP. So that is my top 5 for this week, the top 5 Super Bowl MVPs. I would say enjoy the weekend of sports, even though we do have some sports. But, oh, guys, it's a depressing weekend for us major football fans, because we don't get any football. Oh, we have to wait and wait and wait and wait and wait for this fucking Super Bowl to start. Oh, my God. Oh, but anyways, enjoy the weekend of sports that we do have. And I will talk to you fools on Monday.